Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School. Here, you'll get fresh insight from the people at the very top of the tech companies who make the products we love. Remember, you can learn product management live online. Visit productschool.com to discover our new certificate path. There, you can also join the world's largest community of PMs and network with the leaders from these podcasts at our online events. There's something happening almost every day.
Great. Thank you so much. Thanks for the intro and happy to be here. And excited to share with you guys some of the frameworks and metrics that we use in Masterclass and I've used throughout my career to help drive better decision-making. So I'll just share my screen here. And by the way, please excuse the background. I know that we're coming in live from Tulum, just stepped out from a cocktail hour, but I'm excited to kind of get into the weeds with you guys on some of this content. So for those of you guys that don't know Masterclass or haven't seen our ads, Masterclass is a streaming online service where you can learn from the very best in the world. So think about Martin Scorsese teaches directing, or Stephen Curry teaches basketball, or Bob Iger teaches business leadership. So for Masterclass, my team and I focus on optimizing the website. So if you go to masterclass.com, we build features that make your experience better and ultimately drive higher conversion. And that's really kind of made us think a lot about our processes, because we're running a lot of experiments every week. We launch about 3 to 5 experiments a week. And so how we prioritize our time, what we test, and how we make decisions based off of that is really important to us. So I think that a lot of these tactics, I think, will be helpful to you, whether you're doing conversion optimization, or really whether you're doing core products, and just a lot of functions, because it's centered around how do we make strong decisions and prioritize your time. So let's dive in. We'll talk about a number of different things, from defining what the goal is that we're trying to go after, how do we make a growth model that helps us understand across our different growth channels which ones should we prioritize. And within a growth channel, thinking about prioritizing in a way that allows us to understand what we should double down on, what we should continue to evaluate, and what are some things that we should say, hey, these are items that we're not doing this quarter. And then lastly, how do you create a process and a team in a way that really puts out a lot? Like I mentioned, we do 3 to 5 experiments a week, and that's with a fairly small team. And that's because we focused a lot on how we improve our team velocity, what percentage of our experiments are winners, and then how much impact do those winners have on our metric that we're trying to move. And so we'll go through some tactics there. Let's talk about the goal, though, to start out. This is a list of the top 5 reasons why startups fail or startups new products. And I think there's actually, what I think is interesting about this chart is that there's, I'd say three out of 5 of the reasons are actually avoidable. And what we talk about is the antidote to these 3 failure reasons, in our mind, is just focus. Because if you have a good testing strategy and you have a good way of approaching figuring out problems, you can quickly move to getting product market fit, or quicker than you would otherwise, obviously, which would allow you then to raise more fundraising because you're getting more acquisition and outcompete the other people in the space. And when you think about it, time is really the most valuable thing that you have as a startup. I mean, and the decisions that you make. So it's really important that you have focus. And so that's really what we're going to dive into more deeply on throughout the session, of how do we make sure that we're having that focus throughout all facets of our approach. What is the goal? For those of you guys that, I'm not sure if everyone has read this book called The Goal. It's actually a required read for Amazon execs, and it talks about the theory of constraints, or so basically that means that if any one piece of the system is like a stopping point or is creating a roadblock, it really hurts the throughput of the whole system as a whole. And it also talks about how when you look at a specific piece of like a factory, this book takes place in a factory, one piece of the factory can be optimized and working really well, but it doesn't necessarily translate to throughput. And so it talks about that really the only true goal of a company, and really all companies, is to make money, to make revenue. So when we talk about growth, typically investors and the, you know, CEOs and those types are talking about growth in revenue, right? Growth in money. And so how do we take that concept, knowing that the goal of any company is to make money, and then bring that into all pieces of our growth levers and how we're approaching testing? Because at the end of the day, everything that you're doing should be driving towards that goal. So we'll start with that framework and that context. And that's really where a growth model comes in. A growth model, for those of you that haven't done one before, is think of it like a financial model, but instead of being centered around like output metrics like number of customers, it's more centered around conversion metrics and really metrics that you can change that you think that you can affect. So an example of that would be website conversion, right? That'd be focused on, or click-through rate on paid performance, paid marketing ads, or the number of people that return back to your product in week two or week three, return engagement or return frequency. So it's how we take, it's basically taking a financial model and restructuring it in a way so that we see how our metrics that we can affect interact with each other. And I was just talking about how I can help you prioritize between these different growth levers. And these are some of the core growth levers that we think about. This is primarily for B2C, but it can also be B2B. And so you realize pretty quickly that there's really a lot of ways you can grow a company, you can grow revenue, right? And so given that we know time is constrained and it's really valuable, what do we focus on out of these? And that's where the growth model comes in. So here's an example of what a growth model could look like. This is very, you know, this is a simplified version. And these are just some of the more common growth metrics or growth model metrics that we could focus on. What you'll notice is, like I mentioned, these are kind of typically conversion type of metrics. But these are metrics that we can affect, like I mentioned, because what we want to do is make a growth model in such a way that we can say, okay, well, we think we can improve retention rate, right? Or we can improve purchases per month or cost per click, right? These are things that we want to have hypotheses about. What you also notice is that there is like these bolded metrics, which are kind of like the output metrics. And those are like tied to revenue, right? So these are more sub-metrics that then roll into revenue metrics for the company. What you also notice is that if you look at this holistically, it's really you're talking about CAC over LTV here. Second half comprises LTV, first half is CAC. And the reason why I point that out is because, like I mentioned, a lot of times companies and executive teams don't look at how all these metrics work together. And again, they're looking at them in kind of a vacuum of this one team or this other team. And we haven't really done the due diligence to understand like how they work together. If we got a 10% increase in cost per click, how does that play through to our revenue per acquired, right? And just revenue overall for the company. So what this allows you to do is you can stress test, and you can do kind of low case and upside case scenario testing of the model and see, you know, what if we have a hypothesis we can increase by 10%, what does that really mean? And the other really neat thing that it helps us do is that it creates a shared language across the company so that when we're in these executive meetings, we're talking about these things, well, we can actually have some data to help back it up, and it's not just talking based on assumptions. So we have CAC over LTV, and then we also have these two make revenue. And like I mentioned, what we're really trying to get to here is understanding for each dollar less spent that we got on the CAC or LTV or dollar more earned for LTV, right, based on these hypotheses, what does that mean for our really kind of our core company metrics of CAC over LTV and revenue? It's not true for every company that those are your core metrics, but it's true for a lot of companies. This is also what I call healthy growth, because CAC over LTV is a health metric and revenue is like a growth or an aggregate metric. A lot of times health and growth can be at odds with each other, but it doesn't always have to be, but it's definitely something to be cognizant of, that, you know, you can trade health for more growth. And a prime example of that is paid channels, right? You can easily increase your, you can easily get more revenue by spending more, but obviously you're going to get a probably a higher CAC, and so your CAC to LTV ratio is going to be lower, or it's actually going to be higher in this case. But ideally, you know, as a company, it's to align about like which one of these two are trying to go for more, right? Which one's higher priority? And again, this just gives you that language and that way to talk about it across executives or within your departments, so you can have that discussion. So let's dive in. Let's just say that we'll just talk mostly about website conversions since that's where I'm most comfortable. But really, this framework can be applied in any department and anything you're doing on lots of different levels of granularity, from specific experiments to which initiatives should we do to which growth levers do we want to tackle in this quarter or this month. And I call it a plan it, don't do framework, because so many times do we just buy off more than we can chew, and it detracts from that first goal of having focus as we drive towards more growth and revenue for the company. So this is what we call ICE scoring. Some of you guys may be familiar with this. It stands for impact, confidence, and effort. It's just a really simple way to just apply a three criteria scoring mechanism to whatever it is that you're doing. And more than anything, it just helps, I think, take what's in your mind and helps you think about, okay, this is what I'm feeling like this impact of this initiative is, or this experiment, and I'm feeling this is how much effort it is. But until you actually put it on paper and you put the numbers down, it's tough to really sort rank these different ideas that you have if you have 10 or more, right? So we'll just dive into what each of these means and how to think about them. Start with impact over effort. And this is actually fairly simple. Impact is the estimated effect on the target metric. So going back to that growth model, for instance, if your target metric is conversion, right, website conversion, you think it'd have a 10% increase on the target metric. We grade it 1 through 5, so it can, what grading scale you want to do is really up to you. But we like to keep it simple and just do 1 through 5 because it lets us just do a really quick grading and not be too scientific with it. The key isn't to really know exactly what the impact is going to be. The key is to score the impact relative to each other. So if you have 15 items on your backlog or the things that you're considering, you want to say this one's a 4, and relative to this 4, I think this one's a 3. So it's really a relative scale more than like an actual scale. Because again, the objective of this scoring is really to sort rank within those, and so you should really be scoring relative to each other rather than relative to what you think the outcome is going to be. Effort, we do estimated person weeks of time. So like, estimated number of engineer weeks of time. So this could be 0.5, it could be 1, 2, 2.5. So this is a little bit more accurate than like a 1.5, 1 through 5 scale, but it still makes sure that we capture kind of how long we think this will take, as well as it lets us then message that and say, hey, we think this is going to be like 3 weeks of time. And so this is really a ratio, right? Impact over effort, because a lot of times people are really focused on the impact and they're not thinking about how much effort it's going to take to get that impact, right? Because you want to optimize for the maximum impact and effect on your target metric over how much time you're spending towards that. But I want to dive a little bit deeper onto the confidence piece, because this is where people definitely, I think, don't spend a lot of time. It's probably the most important piece. And when we think about confidence, think about things that you get confidence in right now, scientific articles, right, or news sources, or, something that your friend tells you, like, what's your different levels of confidence with those? And what you'll notice is, like, the scientific articles, for instance, the reason why they have high confidence is because they've been corroborated. They've looked at it from a lot of different angles. And I guess what I'm trying to get at is that different sources of information, whether it's different news sources or scientific articles or your friends, have different levels of confidence, because as they should, there's different levels of trustworthiness and levels of research and things that have gone into that. And so likewise, when we're coming up with ideas, we should be having that same frame of reference to say, well, how confident are we in this idea? Because what you get a lot of times more than not is people getting in a room and brainstorming, kind of doing group brainstorming, which is great. But it's probably one of the less confident idea sources, right? Because we're getting in a room and we're coming up with ideas out of our heads, that we have some expertise. Maybe we do, maybe we don't. Depends on people in the room. But what we like to do for confidence is make sure we have a diverse set of idea sources. And so I listed some of our more common and some of my favorite idea sources there on the left. Things like looking at other comparable products, reaching out to your network, subject matter experts, looking at your prior experience, doing direct user research, data analysis, and brainstorming. Those are the most common ones. And each of those have different applications and different levels of confidence, right, for different reasons. Like for me, at least for us, MasterClass brainstorming is one of the last things that I like to do because, like I mentioned, I think it has one of the lower confidence relative to, let's just say, looking at a comparable product. Like let's say we look at Netflix, right? Anything that's on their website has probably been tested and it's there for a reason and it's been proven, right? So we'd have a higher confidence in that. Or doing user research and talking to users and say, hey, which one of these features would be most valuable for you? That's going to have a high confidence because it came direct from users. They told us that they want this, right? And so we think that it will help achieve our metric. And again, it's not about having a golden idea, any one idea. It's about having a lot of ideas, say 20 plus, and having them be from a diverse set of these different idea sources. So when we break down confidence, I really think about it as a combination of data to support the idea and relevancy. Because taking the Netflix example, you could have, or let's take Dropbox, for instance. Let's just say we see something on their site that we think could be helpful for us, but and so there might be some data to support this on their website because they've obviously tested and they're an established company. But how relevant is Dropbox for our business? Like, is there any differences between our users, right? The sweet spot is obviously when you have both, right? You have data and you have relevancy, and that gives you high confidence in what it is that you're talking about. Just some examples, right? Like, so, and we will really take this to the next level. So just back to here. And we do, you know, full teardowns, right, of other companies. We look at entertainment products, consumer products, education products across different segments. You know, reach out to people in my network who have a specific question about from a subject expert about conversion or other item. And we do specific user research and just ask them, hey, which of these features do you think would be helpful? And, you know, one thing I want to talk about briefly touch on here is it doesn't really have to be that much effort. And I think that's where people fall short on these ideation sources is because it feels like a lot of effort, but it really doesn't have to be. Doing a teardown of a bunch of companies can take a day. Doing a poll on the website can take a day, right? Keep to make sure you're doing it because what happens is it does play through into your win rate and your velocity and how much impact each of your winning features have on the product. So it should be just a simple equation here of impact over effort times confidence. For confidence, we all, again, the scale can be different. We do 1 through 5, but some people will do like a percentage, like a 50%, 75, 85%, or 95%. It's kind of more of like a ratio times your impact over effort. And you get a value score, and that's what you can use to then sort rank all these different things in your backlog. And lastly, like I mentioned, it's called a don't do framework for a reason. So the way we think about this is the top quarter of the things in our backlog are things that we want to double down on that we definitely want to do, invest in. The next quarter are things that we want to do an 80-20 rule, invest 20% of our time and hopefully get 80% of the value. Things that we want to continue to evaluate and invest in quick wins. Then the bottom half are all things that we say, hey, these are what we're not going to do. And this is also really great because it allows you then to message that out to other stakeholders, other departments, to the executive team, and say, hey, we've scored this, we've done our homework. These are what we think are the grading. This is why, because this has high effort, this has low impact, right? And this is why we're not going to do that. Whereas there's many times where, you know, if you tell someone that you're not going to do something and there's no reason behind it, there's no justification, it's much more difficult for them to get on board. All right, so we have our optimized, you know, sort ranked backlog, and we're ready to tackle it, right? Let's just say we're really excited about some of these top 5 hypotheses to improve the website. How do we make sure that our team is moving fast and is able to execute fast? And what can we do there? I really think that more than anything else, especially for startups levels, but really, it's applicable for larger companies as well. But your velocity is probably the most important thing in my mind. Like I mentioned, time is a really valuable asset, But the other thing is, speed is the great equalizer, it's the great de-risker. Because if you have a feature or an experiment you're working on for 2 months and it fails, that's 2 months wasted. Whereas if you were able to do 10 experiments in that time, it's a lot less risky. So you think about your risk portfolio, speed is a great equalizer that can de-risk everything and just lets you, but also lets you learn a lot faster. So that's the ones we put it through. So when you think about like what I call a throughput funnel for a team, you have velocity, success rate, and average impact. So if you're doing a feature, the question is, how many feature experiments are you putting out per engineer per week? That's what we measure on. A baseline for that, just so you know, for like Airbnb's team, who's often looked to as like the example of, a really strong program, is doing one test per engineer per week. I mean, that's pretty fast. We're not quite there yet in Masterclass, but we're getting close. And then success rate. That's for every experiment that you run, let's say you run 10, what percentage of those are a winner, or statistically significant winner that you would implement into the product? And a good benchmark there is roughly between 20 to 30% is the decent success rate. And that's totally acceptable. You should expect 70% of your tests, 70 to 80% to be either flat or be negative. And you still look at really great learnings. I think when I say successes, really all experiments are successes. But some of them are winners and some of them are losers, and you learn from both. And then lastly, you have the average impact. So that's okay. Let's say if 3 out of 10 were winners, how much impact does it have on your target metric? Is it an average of 10% lift, 5% lift? And this metric kind of varies the most based on a company's maturity. More established companies like Facebook would be looking at 1%. Lyft would be a really big win for them, or 1% to 2%, right? That's a huge revenue impacts for them. Whereas when you're early on, first, and depends on what kind of growth lever you're focusing on, there's a lot of room for optimization outside of it. Maybe it's something that's been optimized. You may have these really outsized wins that are giving you 10, 15, 30%. Improvement to your target metric, right? And then eventually those levels out and can begin to right size as you've optimized on towards a certain metric. So looking at these throughput metrics, I've talked a little bit about how they change over time. So I just want to put some visuals up of how that might look. So for testing velocity, this is something that I think can have really quick wins and optimizations. They're not always easy, because usually your testing velocity is determined on how your team is structured, like from an organizational standpoint, how many, like, do you have the right resource allocation, as well as your processes and things like that. So this can be something that can be changed really quick if you are able to get the right cloud structure and you're able to change around your processes. But once you do, you can have huge impacts to your velocity. And we focused on a lot this past quarter, and we actually doubled our velocity over this past quarter, mainly because couple of things. We implemented a new process that gave everyone more autonomy. And then alongside that, we focused a lot on how do we empower our engineers to be what we are calling mini PMs, which just really giving them ownership over the experiment and being able to self-troubleshoot, ask questions, and having them think critically about what the objectives are they're trying to solve. So it takes not only a lot off the product manager, but also lets us move a lot faster. So I mentioned a couple of these, but when I think about improving test velocity, I think about things like, how are we setting up our experiments to be as small as possible? We challenge all of our engineers every time they bring up an experiment to say one thing that they would get rid of, right? One way we can do it faster. So that allows them that space to do that. I was thinking of testing medium. Not everything has to be done an A/B experiment in-house. How can we get the same answers with polling or using the Optimizely UI front end, doing something a little bit more hacky, right? And then lastly, I mentioned pod structure. So this is probably the worst. It can be the most negatively impactful when you don't have a 100% allocated designer, or you're waiting in the backlog for some content or images, and you're just constantly stuck in different backlogs. And that not only kills your velocity, it kills your momentum. And that's something you got to tackle right away, I think. So and continuing on with the test win rate, like I mentioned, the success rate. This is something that I think increases over time and eventually levels out. The reason is that there's some quick wins aspect of this where you know, okay, these are things that are definitely going to get us wins, and so you just tackle those. There's also an aspect of learning your users. So as you begin to learn your users, you understand, okay, what is going to win, and you start identifying these different themes. So that's what I mentioned here is, well, the winning themes, like I mentioned, let's just say an example is, we know that video helps drive conversion or helps drive this metric. We want to continue to double down on that and continue to increase our win rate because we're digging somewhere that we know that there's gold. But then there's also the backlog size and quality. And this goes back to the confidence aspect of how do we do ideation. Do you have 10 things in your backlog or do you have 50, right? And does it come from diverse idea sources or is it kind of internal, like brainstorming to your team? Because that those are all things that will affect what percentage of those ideas are winners. And lastly, you have average lift for win. This can be a little bit all over the place. And that, like I mentioned earlier, it's different by as you become a more mature company and as like a channel matures in terms of how optimized it is. Because you can get some initial quick wins and like I mentioned, some outsized wins that are giving you 15% lift per win. And this gives you like some outliers that bring this up, but then as you optimize, you should definitely level out and that's perfectly okay. And the way I think about improving this is advanced data analysis. So a lot of this is just in terms of like how mature is the optimization of this channel, but there are still ways you can improve that. So if you have a data scientist or just some data resources and analytics resources you can pull to help determine things like, okay, what actions upstream will then result in kind of benefit to our metric downstream. So kind of they'll help identify these allocations or pockets of gold that are outsized that we just didn't necessarily know about or we wouldn't have known about without doing that data analysis. And we look at these metrics every quarter. So these are metrics that we evaluate ourselves on from like a program health standpoint. Every quarter we say, hey, how did our testing velocity increase from last quarter to this quarter? Like I mentioned, we doubled it this past quarter because we focused on it. How did our win rate compare? And like what things can we learn from there? And how do we, maybe we find that we didn't do as much user research as we should have, or we didn't bring those diverse idea sources, like I mentioned. And how are we bringing in the data team and other resources to help us identify these outsized wins to help bring our average lift per win up? And so what you end up with through this whole session is you end up with the ICE scoring method where you can prioritize in your different channels. And so you can optimize your efforts for maximum impact, right, per effort spent and with the highest confidence to achieve that ROI. And you can do that by channel. Or you break it up on initiative, whatever works best for your company and business. And again, you're optimizing your, this is more about optimizing your resourcing towards which of these levers or which of these initiatives are being most impactful. And so we do this every quarter on an initiative level for our team. And we say, okay, what we do ice scoring on our initiatives. And we say, you know, these are what we're not going to do. This is what we're going to double down on. And what you end up with is, you know, really holistic strategy that's hypothesis driven, that has some quantitative aspects of the scoring behind it that allows you to communicate a really strong strategy that helps you achieve maximum revenue growth for the company. And that's all my time. Thank you so much for listening and joining me in the session. If you have any more questions, feel free to message me on LinkedIn. You can also check out my blog at mycrunch.com and feel free to drop a note there and any questions. And looking forward to staying connected. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.